Welcome to this latest edition of the Real Deal Podcast on this 29th of July 2019. I'm your host, Real Deal Quinn, live here from my YouTube channel, streaming Real Deal Podcast on a Monday here as we head towards the end of July into August. Training camps, NFL training camps, of course, are in full swing, and you had the first major injury of the 2019 season, the first one of note in terms of AJ Green tearing his ankle muscles in his ankle on a field, on a horrible field, a situation where probably could have been prevented. You have one of your best players, one of the top receivers in the league, has been a guy who, you know, is on his way to the Hall of Fame someday if he stays on his current pace, out there on a field that shouldn't be playing on in the first place. And, you know, you hear this about the NFL. Now, AJ Green, keep this in mind, AJ Green is coming up on a contract year. Okay, he's coming up on a contract year. He'll be a free agent after this year. You know, he's made roughly around over $70 million in total money in terms of his contract. But this coming season was going to be, you know, probably his last major payday at the age of 30. Now he's out six to eight weeks with ligament damage in his ankle, and who knows what the rest of his season is going to look like. Now, he'll be back. He's going to miss definitely week one, but again, who knows what this injury could do for his contract season. And again, the NFL does not care about, as a whole, does not care about its players as a whole. And, you know, talk of an 18-game season, and I include the Players Association as well. The Players Association, to me, this is something that, you know, this is a suable offense to me. If I'm AJ Green, right now, and I get hurt, and I'm talking to lawyers, I'm trying to find out what connection that field could have had, or what impact that field could have had in terms of my injury. Again, something that would be hard to improve, maybe hard to prove, maybe impossible to prove, but I'm looking into it. Because again, he's coming up on a contract year. He's coming up, again, 30 years old. And again, as a field, again, the field before he even played on the field, practiced on the field, there were doubts about how the condition of this field. It was a joke already. So I'm gonna, you know, put my career on the line for a practice. This wasn't even a game. This is a practice in July. Again, we've seen it. You know, you had players who were complaining about this field even before the practice started, guys were sliding. Apparently they did not, you know, were not able to practice on a new field that they were supposed to practice on, because that field was on Native American ground, and they didn't want to tear up that ground to put on new turf. So they ended up going to this, you know, rinky dink field that was apparently in bad shape. And one of the best players on your team ends up, you know, again, doing ligament damage to his ankle. So, again, that's not the way certainly Cincinnati Bengals want to start the season. The Players Association should be embarrassed by this. The NFL as a whole should be embarrassed by this. Now, you're talking about a $15 billion a year organization and corporation, and you can't even put your players on a field that's safe to play on. And again, if the Players Association wants to do anything, then they should go after the NFL in terms of this. If the Players Association has any balls whatsoever, then they should come after the NFL and protect it all. If this happened in Major League Baseball, there would be the players, you know, there would be, you know, a mutiny. There will be mutiny on Major League Baseball. This happened in Major League Baseball. This happened to one of their players. their players association would go after ownership, go after owners, would go after Major League Baseball as a whole so fast, it would be a settlement. I promise you. This happened to one of their best players or pitcher. So you see that happened over the weekend. Again, Green's going to be out anywhere from 6 to 8 weeks with that ankle injury. And again, who knows how this will affect his season moving forward. Of course, you have the Hall of Fame game coming up on Sunday. This was this past weekend. It will be the last weekend until February, until, you know, or last or mid or late January, that you will not have NFL NFL football. A lot of talk about a couple of guys that are, you know, that are holding out in terms of the running backs in Melvin Gordon and, of course, Ezekiel Elliott. And if you're running, and again, I totally understand why those guys want their money and are trying to get their money. But I'm telling you right now, if you're running an NFL franchise, I would never, if I were running an NFL franchise, I would never, and I mean ever, pay a running back. Ever. You draft a running back, you let his contract run out, and then you draft another one. I would never pay a running back above market value. Never. I don't care. I don't care if they're the best running back in the league. I don't care how productive they've been. That is a position that you just don't pay, and that you just don't pay. That is a position that could be easily replaced. That is a position that is not, you're not winning championships because of your running back, or because of who you have running the football for you. You're not winning championships because of that. Your quarterback, your offensive line, pass rushers, safeties, cornerbacks, those are positions that you pay premium money for, not the running back situation. That's your running back. And again, running backs, and can I knock Melvin Gordon or Ezekiel Elliott for trying to get their money? Of course not. Of course not. Especially if Ezekiel Elliott, you have a franchise that is known for paying players and taking care of his best players in terms of Dallas. But now that situation is going to be interesting because you have Dak Prescott, you have Amari Cooper. They have the offensive line that's gotten a ton of money. They can't pay everybody. They will not be able to pay everybody. They're going to have to make a choice. They're not going to be able to pay all those guys. They're going to at a certain point, they're going to have to make a choice. Again, I don't think Ezekiel Elliott will hold out. You know, I don't think this holdout will last for long. Anybody that learned anything from the Le'Veon Bell holding out the entire season, you know, showed you that he really didn't make that much more money than what he would have made versus the Pittsburgh offer. He lost a year of his prime. That's not including endorsements that you can lose. You know, say Ezekiel goes out there and rushes for 1,500-1,600 yards. That's more endorsements and more money is going to be put in his pocket. And again, if you're Ezekiel Elliott, let them franchise you. If they franchise you, they're going to have to pay you in the top five player at your position. So he still has in a position. They're just not in a position of power. NFL players don't have power like NBA players have in terms of getting paid and holding out. Holding out just doesn't work in it. It does not work in the NFL, especially at that position. It just doesn't. And again, if I'm running a franchise, I would never in a million years pay a running back. I just wouldn't do it. But it's hard to knock a book guy for trying to get his money, especially at that position. That position is a shelf life, 28 to 29. Both of those guys have had a ton of work in their relatively short careers. Well, not short careers, as Melvin Gordon came in a year before, has 4 years actually under him. Ezekiel Elliott still has 2 years left on his contract. So if you're Dallas, you definitely wouldn't pay him right now. Melvin Gordon just has, you know, this is his last year on his contract. San Diego's gonna have an interesting decision to make with him, considering that I think he's more important to San Diego than what Ezekiel Elliott is to Dallas. San Diego already has paid their quarterback. The offense, they already have paid the other players for the most part. They don't have the same similar situation than Dallas. So if you ask me which one of those guys were more likely to get their money, I probably would lean towards Melvin Gordon. Dallas, even though Dallas has had a history of paying its better play, best players, I don't, I think Dallas has been relatively sound with the decision making, whether it's drafting or who to pay of late. Like Jerry Jones has actually been listening to the people around him. They're gonna have to pay Dak Prescott, make him at least at minimum a top five quarterback in terms of salary. I don't see them giving Dak Prescott, making him the highest paid quarterback in the game. I see him; he's going to be top five. Amari Cooper will be a top five, top three paid receiver. So again, I don't see where the money is left over for Ezekiel Elliott to be the highest paid running back in the league. I just don't see where it is left. I just would, if he wants to hold out, let him hold out. I feel like I have a legit top three, top five offensive line. I feel like I can plug a running back who's going to get me, 11 to 1200 yards. You don't need running backs rushing for 14, 15, 1600 yards. You don't anymore, especially in today's NFL. You don't need that at all. So those are kind of some of the storylines that dominated up the NFL up until this point. Again, you'll have the Hall of Fame game come this Sunday. As far as the NBA, things have still that slowed down a bit. People, we had you had MVP projections, you had wins and losses projections. People want to make a big deal about in regards to the Lakers and Clippers. Thankfully, the Kawhi Leonard stuff has kind of slowed down. It was getting ridiculous. Every single day was something new in regards to what was going on with Kawhi Leonard. Now I think the NBA will go with football coming on, and with the training camps in full swing, the NBA kind of will get a bit quiet, unless something happens like Chris Paul gets traded or there's, unfortunate, if hopefully this doesn't happen, if there's an injury to a player during summer league or something like that. Well, not NBA summer league, but guy working out. Other than that, I don't expect to hear too many things in regards to the NBA until, come September, mid-September, early October. You do have still LeBron James in the headlines. So LeBron James's son, Bronny James, LeBron James Jr., Bronny, is his nickname. Is playing AAU. He's gonna be a freshman in high school next year. He's gotten taller. He's dunking now. I mean, dunking easily. And he's really, really been showing out on this AAU circuit. LeBron, of course, is at every game, every game, as you would expect. But this weekend, during pregame, LeBron was participating, basically in a dunk off with Bronny James Jr., with LeBron James Jr., with LeBron James Jr. And from the outside, it looks harmless. You have a father bonding with his son, putting on a show for the fans, and what have you. But I don't like it whatsoever, because I'll tell you why. Isn't it those games? Those practices, those events are not about LeBron James. Anybody who's watched NBA basketball since 2000, 2003, or since, I would say, since 2000, since 98, depending on you, if you follow LeBron in Akron, I've seen LeBron dunking for the last almost 20 years. This time is about his son, and it's about those other kids who are out there, who are, not named LeBron James Jr., who are out there playing AAU basketball, who are out there having the time of their lives, as 15, 16, 14, 15, 16-year-olds. It is not about LeBron James. And again, This is a guy who once said that one of his regrets was giving his son his first name. Henceforth, you have Bronny James, because of all the pressure, because of all the attention that would be bestowed upon him for being the firstborn LeBron James. No one should be coming there to see LeBron James. It's all about the students to me, the kids. LeBron James wants to stay on the sidelines, wants to clap, yell, you know, under control and cheer for his son. That's one thing. Wants to support the team, uniforms, what have you, stuff like that. I have no problem with that. But LeBron James in the layup line, having a dunk on, you know, doing dunks, throwing back dunks. Look at me. It's because all this is not, there's no realistic reason, logical reason why you're doing it. You're not doing it for your son. Your son is dunking on his own. I don't think you're trying to show up your son. LeBron James is obsessed with LeBron James. LeBron James cannot get enough of LeBron James. And I'm sure I don't know how LeBron James Jr. feels about it. I wouldn't like it, you know, if I were LeBron James Jr. Just go to the sidelines. It's like, I mean, this is my time. It's not your time. It's my time. And again, it doesn't take away from the type of father he is. I'm sure he's a great father. He's at the games supporting his sons. He has a younger son that plays basketball. Again, he's at every video that I've seen of Bronny James playing. LeBron James has been there, so you can't knock him as a father from that standpoint of being there for his sons or even his daughter who's much younger. But the idea that you don't want the type of attention and want that, you know, that laser beam of all eyes on your son is one thing, but then you're going to go, you know, in his layup lines and, you know, have dunk offs with him. I don't know. Maybe in LeBron's mind, that's a way of taking the attention off his son. It's not. I don't think he is taking attention off his son, but maybe in his mind, maybe that would be his justification for doing that. He just needs to fall back and just support his son, root for his son on the sidelines. He doesn't need to be dunking in the layup lines. He doesn't. And of course, the coach is not going to say anything because the coach is not, you know, it's LeBron James. The coach is not going to say anything. But because the coach wants LeBron James' son to play for him. The coach stands up to LeBron. Probably more chances than likely LeBron probably will take his son off the team. Because that's the beginning, and that is the culture that LeBron creates with anything he's a part of from a basketball standpoint. If you are going to benefit from my name, if you're going to benefit from my talent, you got to be willing to put up with my bullshit. So whether if that's my entourage, whether that's, you know, hiring an assistant coach that I used to work with, that's a part of the LeBron James package. So in this case, part of coaching his son is I might get in layup lines and have dunk contests with my son. That's a part of it. Couple of key series in Major League Baseball coming up this week. You have Washington and Atlanta. This is a big series for Washington. They need to, you know, cut into that lead as we head towards August. Atlanta right now is in total control of that division, as we stand here on July 29th. Scherzer has been placed on the IL. Probably the 10-day IL, so that certainly doesn't help the Nats. You also have the Giants and the Mets, which about a month ago, or even maybe 6 weeks ago, you would have said that's a nothing series. But the Giants, San Francisco Giants, have had one of the great in-season turnarounds I've seen in recent memory, going from basically, you know, 9 or 10 games under 500 now to about 2 games over 500, and they're right in the thick of the wild card race in the National League, to a point to where you have people questioning whether or not they should actually move Madison Bumgarner or their all-star closer, Will Smith. Bumgarner has pitched great of late. He's lowered his ERA to about 3.65. Will Smith was an all-star this year, and there are certainly a number of teams that can use a bullpen, some bullpen help. Certainly the Nationals are one of them that can use some bullpen help as well. And the Yankees certainly could use a starting pitcher of the caliber of Bumgarner. If I'm the Yankees, I would go after Bumgarner. The Yankees have a loaded, they have an absolute loaded farm system. They have the assets to go after Bumgarner. If I'm the Giants, I would move him. You're not winning a championship, and you've gotten 3 championships out of him at this point. You're not going to get any more out of him. And the chances are, the likelihood of them re-signing him in the offseason when he becomes a free agent are not very good. He's going to still get a top-tier contract. Now, again, there are people out there who say that he's not the pitcher that he once was. I still think that he is a all-star caliber pitcher, and that guy is money. What you're getting right now with Bumgarner, you're getting a guy that's going to eat up innings, and you are getting a guy who has been one of the most dominant postseason pitchers in recent memory. And I still think he is an above-average all-star caliber pitcher who has just been stuck on a horrible team the last 2 to 3 years. The last 2 to 3 years, the Giants were in the playoffs in 2016. The last 2 years have been terrible. And he hasn't been healthy for the most part. But this season, for the most part, he's been healthy, and he's looked like the Madison Bumgarner of old, that guy who can dominate a postseason, that guy who is fearless, and the guy who can hit as well. Again, the Yankees, if you watch the Yankees against the Red Sox this past weekend, you know that they desperately need starting pitching. Again, Boston is the best offensive team in baseball, but still, even before that, the Yankees starting pitcher was getting pounded. Again, I had a Yankee fan a couple weeks ago told me when the Yankees were rolling, credit to him, because he's a real Yankee fan, told me that they desperately needed another starter. And that certainly has been the case over the last week to 10 days since the All-Star break. The starting pitching has been amongst the worst in all of baseball. Teams are lighting them up. And Boston, absolutely, despite what happened yesterday with the Yankees winning 9-6, Boston, for the most part, batted around the Yankees over the course of that 4-game series. So, again, if I'm the Yankees, I'm going after Bumgarner. They might, you know, you could see them possibly going after Bauer from the Indians. But number one on my list would be Bumgarner from the Giants. And certainly, again, the Yankees have all the necessary assets in the farm system and with positional players in order to make that deal happen. Of course, tomorrow night you will get the Democratic debates. It'll be the 30th and the 31st. If you're somebody who's into politics, if you're somebody who cares about the 2020 election, I would just, you know, heed some advice to you. And number one, of course, watch these debates. I understand that there are a million candidates, and it can be, you know, hard to decipher, you know, to keep up with as many of Democrat candidates as they are. Hopefully, you know, soon enough they'll start, you know, whittling down as you see certain candidates start to run out of money, which always happens. But I would just completely ignore the racist distraction that you're getting from 45. It is a ploy. It is a means to get you focused on what's coming out of his mouth instead of instead of the Democrats in terms of their strategy, in terms of what they should be doing, in terms of their plan, their policies, their issues. Telling me, saying that 45 is racist is like telling me water is wet. I already know it. I don't need any further confirmation on it. What he says is what he says. I frankly could care less. We know, I know, I'm speaking for myself, I can't speak for everybody, what, you know, that we want him, I want him out of office. Now, to me, I'm focusing on what is the plan of the Democratic Party? Like, what are you bringing to the table? What is your strategy or strategies? And right now, again, still have a lot of time, but right now, I don't know what the strategy is. I see about 9, 10, 12 candidates who are going in their separate directions, who actually believe that they can win the race when it's only about maybe 2 to 5 that have a legitimate chance at grabbing a nomination, maybe even less than that. Maybe it's only like 2 or 3 or 4. But let's say 5 to make it fair, to be fair about it. Again, I wouldn't get caught up in any of the nonsense or the garbage that's come out of the mouth of 45 in the last couple of weeks. It is a means to distract you from what the real issues are and from what really is important. The most important thing is going out there is paying attention to what is being said and being stated by the candidates who you want to hear from or who you care about in terms of who you're going to vote for. Or collect, it really should be you at this point. You should be collecting information from the prospective candidates. That's where your energy should be, not on what's coming out of 45's mouth. Again, hard to you know, turn a blind eye or a blind ear to it, but I mean, what, we're in 2019, he's been in office since 2016. I've been hearing it going back, you know, to 2015, so you should be used to it by now, to be honest with you. So I would just encourage anybody out there, just pay attention to what's going on with the Democratic Party, pay attention to their policies, pay attention to what's coming out of the mouths of the candidates. How does it affect you directly? How does it affect this country moving forward as a whole if they are elected? That's the stuff that's important, not the other nonsense from, you know, from 45. This is the Real Deal Podcast. It's Real Gerald Quinn. As we try to make it to, you know, get ready for the NFL football as well as college. College football is coming up soon as well. College football is about less than a month away. About 3.5 weeks to a month away. I think that going to college football this year, as I, you know, we'll have plenty of time to look at it moving forward. But the bottom line is, to me, the biggest question is, can anybody break the Clemson, Alabama stranglehold on college football right now? Who is going to, you know, whether it be Georgia, you know, can Michigan jump up, Ohio State, some of the usual candidates? Because right now it is a two-horse race in college football when it comes to those teams. Those teams are heads and shoulders above everybody. And is there going to be that third team that joins the Alabama and Clemson party? That is the question going into the college football season, because those two teams have programs have completely separated themselves from everybody else throughout in the sport. Is it good for the sport? I'm not necessarily, you know, I'm big on, like, I'm not one who knocks dominance. I just spent the better part of 5 years tossing bouquets towards the Golden State Warriors. But for football, you expect NFL, college, a little bit more parity, considering that there are a number of blue blood teams in college football. There are a number of talented teams that recruit well that should be better challenging, pushing Clemson and Alabama more than what they are. Now again, ACC, I think will be improved this year. Will be slightly improved this year. I expect Florida State to be to be much better than what they have been in the last couple of years. Some of the bottom half of the ACC teams, we're getting better. But, you know, it's still Clemson's conference. As we all know, it's still Clemson's conference to lose. The SEC, you know, LSU is expected to challenge Alabama. We know what Georgia right now is knocking on the door. And could have, you know, last two times they played Alabama, could have easily beaten Alabama in the national championship 2 years ago and in the SEC championship last year. Probably, I mean, should have beaten Alabama, to be honest with you. So there, we know that Georgia is right there as well. But can either one of those teams, LSU or Georgia, break through against Alabama and break through in the college football playoff? Before I even take the Big 12 series, they need to win a playoff game in the college football playoffs before I even take a Big 12 team series. So as we get closer and closer to the college football season, it is all about two teams in Alabama and Clemson. And I'm not necessarily sure that is good for the sport. I think you need a couple other teams that could push those teams that we have confidence that will push those teams moving forward. As far as a couple of the albums that came out this week, a number of albums. It's a ton of great music out there right now. I mean, I haven't even had a chance to listen to all of it, but I was able to listen to Chance the Rapper and BJ the Kid. The Chance the Rapper one is just too many tracks. You don't need skits. It's not a bad album. It's not great. Is it an album that could probably had 10 less tracks? If you cut the album by like 8 to 9, maybe 10 tracks, had a chance to be a great album, but just too many tracks. I think we had a point in music. And you want to blame Kanye West for this, you want to blame other artists for this, but once you get past 10 to 12 tracks, you're floating with danger right now. I mean, your attention spans are just not, my attention span is not very long. But unless you're going to come out with a certified classic album from start to finish, and every song is going to be engaging, and every song, you got to be careful about these 15 to 20 tracks. You get past 15, that's a danger zone. That's the thing. I think anywhere from 10 to 13 is a perfect number. No more than 15 tracks. E-40 has 26 tracks on his album. 26. So, again, right now you have a number. You have just a bunch of great albums out right now. A bunch of quality albums out. You still got Freddie Gibbs. You got the Dreamville album out. Knife Wonder came out. The 19th, that's a great album, Big Crit. So this is, again, the music scene right now, hip hop scene is definitely, you know, caught up from a slow start in 2019, at the beginning of 2019. Rick Ross is coming out, I think, August 9th. So, Nas, Lost Tapes, which to me has been the best album I've heard all this year. And again, when you're Nas, you can come out with more than 12, 13, more than 14, 15 tracks. That's how the album is, but it's lit right like that. The album is songs I don't even skip over in terms of the Nas Lost Tapes too. Every album can't do that. Once you begin, when you get past that 15 tracks, you are absolutely in the danger zone. So a lot of quality stuff out there right now. There's one thing I wanted to get to. I almost forgot it. Nicole Murphy, Layla Rajan, Antoine Fuqua, who of course directed Training Day way back when. You know, the easy thing to say, you know, it's easy to call Nicole Murphy home wrecker. I'm gonna get into the head of Antoine Fuqua for a second. You have your wife, Layla Rashawn, is 55 years old. She's not in the greatest of shape right now. And I'm being as kind as I can be without outright calling her fat. You have Nicole Murphy, who is 51 years old, 4 years younger, who is probably in the shape of a 25-year-old and probably looks like Nicole Murphy could go for 34, 35 easy. Nicole Murphy's 51. If you didn't know Nicole Murphy's age and didn't know she was married to Eddie Murphy way back in the early 90s, you would not think by any stretch of imagination that Nicole Murphy was 51 years old. So you're Antoine Fuqua. You see your wife, you see Nicole Murphy, and it's not like Nicole Murphy is 25 or 30. It's not like she's, a spring chicken from that standpoint. Part of you has to wonder about your wife in terms of, has to think, and this is just human nature. Why can't my wife be in better shape physically? Part of you has to be thinking that. Now, again, I'm not knocking morally what's wrong on both sides of it, on both sides, Antoine Fuqua and Nicole Murphy. It's wrong, but from a man's standpoint, I understand. I understand how you, I understand. Again, I'm inside the head of Antoine Fuqua. So, you heard Nicole Murphy apologize, whatever that means. Obviously, obviously, it wasn't just an innocent peck on the cheek. They were in France, poolside. Everybody knows what time it is in regards to that. You obviously feel bad for little Roshan. She had two kids by this dude. Married, still married. But, the relationship clearly is not in a great place. And again, I'm going to get bashed by the moral police, but, that's fine. And I'm not, again, I don't condone cheating. I don't condone another woman getting involved in somebody else's marriage or putting somebody else's marriage in further peril than it's already in. I mean, that marriage, the bad marriage clearly is on shaky ground as is. Nicole Murphy's not helping it by any stretch of imagination. But there does come to a, I mean, it does come a point where, as a man, you see your wife, the shape that your wife is in, and you see Nicole Murphy, and you think to yourself, why can you look a little, again, this is what Antoine Fuqua's wife thinking. Why can you look a little bit like that? I'm not asking you to be aerobics instructor. I'm not asking you to have your own fitness website. I'm not asking you to be a supermodel, but she's had five kids. Later on, Sean's had two kids. Nicole Murphy's had five kids. She had five kids by Eddie Murphy. All of them are grown. I'm just giving you another perspective, rather than stating the obvious of, home wrecker and cheater and what have you. But feel bad for Layla Rochon, especially some of the pictures that have been coming out with her in regards to the weight. Remember, she was, she was sunshine. This was sunshine off Harlem Nights. This was the girl off, I forgot what her name was on Boomerang. She was in a movie. She was in a movie for about 5 minutes. But this Atlanta was showing was a at one point was was a good was could have been a Jet Beauty of the Week back in the day. But time and a couple of kids have taken their toll on her physically, and you have Nicole Murphy. That's a good, I don't know, do I want to end the podcast on that? Well, we're going to re-ask. We're going to end the podcast on that. As always, this is the Real Deal Podcast. It's the Real Gerald Quinn. Tell me like it is with no apologies. Thanks for listening. I'm out. Thank you.